welcome to another edition of a little show we call The Blind Handyman. This is show number...
It is 220, in fact.
220 shows of these things we've done. And I'm Phil Parr, and well, this is Don Patterson.
Yeah, so right here.
And Don Shaw.
Yeah, another rocky start here.
John Conley is not here.
Not here yet.
But he will be Thursday, come to think of it. And whether that's good or bad, I don't know. Let's call.
It's time to make that phone call to...
It is time to make that phone
call. Our mystery guest, huh? Oh, you told already who the mystery call was to.
Yeah.
Mystery guest is right. Is a guest? Let's see if we can do it here.
Oh, when's he coming back? That's the mystery.
Yeah, that's the question of the day.
Yes, sir. I know how to do it. Let's see if it did. One, two... If you've ever seen Open for Ray Price Saturday.
Hello.
And it was great fun. How are you, sir?
I am fine.
Well, you're not fine, or you'd be here if you were fine.
Hi, Thomas.
Tom, so you stand.
I'm fair to partly cloudy. I guess we could put it that way.
Fair to Conroe, or whatever they used to, say.
Yes, sir. That's what you used to say, fair to Conroe.
Yeah, well, they weren't good enough to work in Houston, so they were just kind of fair to Conroe. Middle of the too far.
You know, middle of the line.
Means they belong to one of them Conroe radio stations back when the Conroe radio stations were out of market. Now they're Houston stations, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
What are you doing for good? Anything?
Well, for good, I'm not sure I'm doing anything.
But you're...
you heard we lost our guy down in Houston County, didn't you?
Our guy in Houston County?
The radio guy.
Oh, Jim Gibbs?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he lost him a week and a half ago.
About a week ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, about a week ago. They did a salute to him on the radio station over at Friday, KIVY in Crockett.
KIVY, right.
Put it on in 1949. He was just a child.
Uh-huh, and they called that place, I think, Pioneer Broadcasting?
Probably so.
I believe they did.
How did you know of his demise?
I read the Lufkin News online.
Oh, yeah? And it had an obituary for Jim Gibbs.
It had an obit in there on him, yes, sir.
One of these guys that worked for him, a guy named Peter something that used to be on do afternoons for him, said he had his resume. He'd worked up in Massachusetts or someplace. He came in, he brought his resume in. Jim listened to his air check and looked at his resume and said, "Well, now, Peter, how much would it cost to get you down here?" He said, "I found out right then what a frugal man Jim Gibbs was."
Yeah.
I thought that was as nice a way of putting it as I ever heard anybody, you know. Find out what a frugal man he was.
Yeah.
Is he the guy that had the kind of the deep voice? You know,
Jim Gibbs talked like this all the time. Every Crockett in downtown Crockett on the square, loud all the time. Like that. That's the way the Stowe department store is having a big sale this week on the square in downtown Crockett.
Certainly. Crockett's answer to Paul Harvey.
He talked real loud. He was a very intelligent man. Put on that radio station and sold it for $1.2 million back about 4 years ago.
Goodness. Made some money. Goodness
in Crockett, Texas, $1.2 million.
That's pretty amazing itself.
Yes, it is. Goodness. The price of real estate has gone up.
Sold it to a kid that started out working for him, doing mornings for him back about 20 years ago. Kid named Leon Hunt bought that radio station. You knew I'd know all this.
That's why I brought it up. I thought, well, now, he'll tell me the story.
Well, we lost Hal Haley, you know, back in a year or so ago. We're on the Livingston radio station.
Yeah, so now we've lost Livingston and Crockett.
Yeah, those old boys put those stations on. Jack Bell over at Center, I don't know if he's still alive, but they put on these little stations in little towns.
These old radio people are going away, aren't they?
Darrell Yates is dead, and I don't feel too good myself.
And I'm looking a little pale. So.
Listen, what about you? When are you coming? What is your deal? When are you coming back up here?
I don't know. That's a good question. I can't answer that.
Do you know we're about to have Blind Weekend without you, the first one?
My goodness gracious. When is it scheduled?
John Conley's coming in Thursday.
All right. Yeah, he'll probably be without me, Dan.
Any chance?
But I don't know. I doubt it.
Any chance you just kind of get in the truck and ride by? We'll all come out and gather around the truck and drink and talk to you?
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
You wouldn't even have to get out of the truck. We'll just sit in the truck with you.
Everybody call in the truck.
Right, we can do it. We can do it. All right, well, man, I guess we'll go and read some email and wish
well,
you were here.
Called. I'd forgotten it was Tuesday.
Yeah.
I had a nurse come see me earlier.
Is that right?
And do my blood work up.
Well, that's why
that.
He's not ever going to come back here to see us. He's got nurses coming
well,
to
yeah,
his house.
Well, yeah, I was just
hell?
Thinking, you know, to hell with it. Yeah. Yeah, I might as well stay here.
Yeah, I mean.
Well, between the three of us, we have doctors galore and nurses galore.
Coming in and out between you and Martha and who else?
Well, Cleta doesn't have any nurses coming, but, I mean, she's here for all of it.
They call it the Burke Medical Center?
Not yet. I wish.
Burke Medical Center.
Well, it's more like a nursing home.
Think about it. If you can figure out a way to come by, we'd love to have you. I guess you're not coming. Pat's going to make the cornbread this year, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Conley, the only one coming up.
I couldn't get anybody else to come. I called one other boy and invited him, and he said, no, I don't really like y'all. And I'm not. No, I invited one other guy. I don't know if he understood what I was trying to tell him. If he had bus fare to get here, we'd feed him when he's here and give him a nice warm place to stay.
I don't guess Bennett's interested, huh?
Bennett, I don't think you could interest him in anything.
His health's pretty bad, though, isn't it?
He thinks he's on dialysis.
Oh, really?
Boy, we're all fading fast, aren't we, huh?
Boy.
Listen,
I'm telling you.
Give it some thought and come if you can.
I will.
All right, sir. We'll talk with you.
Yes, sir. See y'all.
Bye,
later, Tom.
All righty. Bye bye.
All right. There's our mystery guest.
Yeah. All the way from Burke, Texas.
Damn, you okay, Pat?
Yeah.
All right. Email time.
I had a little frog in my throat there.
First bite of fresh meat you've had in a month.
Yes, sir. Excuse me.
Yes, sir.
Well, let's see. Of course, our list mail here, and I'd like to just start off and say this. Something I've never ceased to be amazed when you read down through the list. It sometimes the number of posts or responses or replies to a single post.
Yeah.
Like this time it was like miter box, then miter box something chop saw, but just every third post it seemed like miter box. Somebody was talking about their miter box, and I that's not one that I chose. But then another one they got off on the water list, I mean, not the water list, but the low water Johns. The water saver.
Yeah,
water saver.
I've heard about them.
And there were tons of posts about that. And then also, what I'm amazed about is sometimes that the projects that one will mention that he may or may not attempt. And I'll start with that one. First one is our friend Ray Boyce, who posts quite a bit and always kind of educational. Always educational and, you know, lengthy, sometimes very detailed about almost anything. And was talking about making an aluminum window screen frame. And I'm thinking, why would a blind guy even consider? Why would you want
to? Why would anybody want to? Blind or otherwise?
Yeah, or otherwise. In other words, because you can buy the material readily available, as he stated, and it comes in. We're talking about the links, and he gave a rather detailed plan, but I promise you, for $18 or $20, you can have any window screen made and here in Lufkin by this. In today and out tomorrow, you know.
Yeah.
And so it just seemed like one of those projects would be why.
You can buy the stuff and cut angles and put it together.
Yeah, cut angles and put braces in it. And put the screen in. And that. Yeah, because one time back at now, sometimes necessity. Long time ago, I helped my mother or dad, or maybe it's both, we redid a wooden screen door. Back then, because a screen door probably cost $35 or $40, and that's the furthest thing from, at the time, they probably didn't have $30.
Oh,
and so you took the little screen molding, the wood off, you usually couldn't take it off without breaking it, so you had to buy some more, and then after you got your screen in there and trimmed, and you put it back on, and you had to touch up with paint. I could see that, but not an aluminum. Anyway, in the same thing, I saw this post about building a sawhorse. And outside, I guess, of just the sheer fun of it, you know, that you made your own, there again, you can buy them in sets of two, plastic that will hold 2,500 pounds for a set of them, $27-$28. You know,
at Lowe's
or Home Depot or whatever, and they're adjustable legs, which if you build one out of wood, it's not going to be adjustable. Now, there again, if it's just for the fun of it and you want to do it, knock yourself out. And I used to work sometime with my uncle, who is a very good carpenter, and I did some carpenter work for a time, a couple of years. And those guys made them on site as they needed them, you know, just out of lumber there. Okay, we need a big saw.
There wasn't a Lowe's or Home Depot.
Well, and then it was just so convenient. They had their table saws and everything set up, and they just, hey, we need a scaffold up here, or we need a big sawhorse, boom, you know.
Just build it on site.
For home use, I have two sets of them. I bought four. And now I will give one piece of advice. The first ones I bought had a little notch on each end of each sawhorse where you could turn a 2x4 up on its edge
and make a scaffold.
Yeah. I went back to get a matching set, and I have yet to find those. But if you can find the one with the notches, get them as opposed to just
the flat.
Where
you could make a table to lay by your table saw if you wanted
to. Yeah, or a big long. I had two 14-foot long 2x6s, and I made a big long workbench that I could put everything on just out in the field, and then when I got through, I took it down and stored it. Yeah. But anyway, those were the two things that I just happened to notice that really weren't one specific email. All right, the next one, the Water Saving Johns, and I forgot who wrote this, but anyway, it just says, he was talking, I think it might have been our friend Ron Yearns, maybe. I'm not sure. And he was talking about, just, hi guys, so we got in, we put in a new water saver toilet a couple of months ago. And he was talking about how well they liked it. And that so far they hadn't had any problems. And that he asked a plumber, so he looked at two, the one that he bought, and it's called the American Standards Cadet 3. And then there's another one that's actually made in Japan called the Toto or the To.
I remember reading about that one.
Let me see.
And Josh pronounced it like
the tata, the tutu.
Yeah.
Anyway, and he said the reason why he decided on the American Standard is because there was quite a difference in price. And these plumbers, he said the particular plumber he had talked to had put one in his home, say, 2 years ago, and it had had no problems with it. The gist of his email, too, he said the things that he had learned is they worked better depending on two things, the size of the opening for the water to come into the tank and the size of the throat in the bowl itself. And he said if he remembered right, his was like 1¾ inches or 1⅞ inches for the water to get out of there. And then in another post on down, I read that where actually this has been a standard the commodes since the 90s, that where they could only use to flush each flush a gallon and a half to a gallon and 3/4 of water. Of course, that doesn't mean that the government made everybody go back and retrofit their home. And then, of course, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, they didn't like them because sometimes you had to flush them twice and all that. But really, this is kind of a part of the green revolution, and whether you like them or not, you're going to have to get on board because that's all that's going to be available.
Oh, yeah, if you buy a new one
when
now.
When I built the pavilion, I inadvertently put in a real low water saver, John, because when I framed, or when the framers framed my little building, actually, with my plumbing, the way it was, to put a standard commode in there, we were too close to the wall.
Okay.
The tank wouldn't fit. And I went to Lowe's, somebody clued me in, instead of a 12-inch rough-in commode, they call it, which is standard, I needed a 10-inch rough-in commode. And actually, the bowl and all the dimensions of the bowls are the same. It's just that the tank is 2 inches narrower than the 12-inch, and it fit against my wall. It fit perfectly. But it also, by its nature, by its size, used less water. And so it is, in fact, a water saver, John. Boy, in these new hotels, somebody commented on going to, he encountered, oh, well, later, and part of this same thing is Dale Levins wrote, he said, did I just imagine it, or do some of the water saver Johns use air pressure? And then Max Robinson responded that, yes, they do, that in a hotel he stayed in a couple of years ago, he was, I don't know, looking around or figured out, and there's they can retrofit old commodes with a thing, and somehow it creates its own air as a part of the mechanism and forces the water in case you don't to make sure you have a good flush. And then remember back years, or not so many years ago, in the more expensive houses and everything, these quiet flush toilets?
Yeah.
And I always wondered, well, I mean, you go in somebody's house, you know, and punch the lever and you don't hear a thing. Now these in these new hotels with these water savers, the noise will wake the dead.
Oh, it sounds,
I mean,
like, yeah,
it sounds like a humongous.
Oh, it does. It's a tremendous noise. And on, remember, Don, on the cruise we took, Pat?
Yeah.
The cruises we took, they all use some air pressure.
Yeah.
On those.
And so anyway, that's what I say. And Dale had written, he said, did I dream that up? And
no.
Max Robinson says, no, you didn't. And he kind of wrote part that.
All right.
All right, also, then another 1,000 posts I must have seen about how to drive a long screw, a wood screw, long screws. And then they were, and obviously, then somebody, they were talking about what they needed these screws for, and somebody said, you know, well, make sure if we're putting down decking, you don't need one that long. But anyway, I just Googled that about long, and there are screw holders and drill bit holders, and that comes all in one piece. You can buy them for $7.95. That when they're contracted, they're like 4 and something inches long, and when they're expanded, they're 7 7/8 inches long. They're magnetically, you put your screw in there, and it has the screwdriver bit, and it helps you keep the screw straight.
Yeah, it's
and
like
you
a can sleeve. Drive, I had one of those.
And you can buy those for sheetrock screws and or just for regular screws,
yeah.
And it's really, it helps you keep it
okay,
straight.
Okay, so you stick the screwdriver, you screw up in it, and you put the drill on the other end, it already has a screwdriver bit.
It fits, the screwdriver holder, I'm sorry, the screw holder has a chuck, a quarter inch that you put in your drill bit. And then the drill bit, I guess, is in the end of the screw holder, but as you start pushing in on the screw and turning it, the sleeve goes down over the screw and holds it and keeps it straight. It's a
You can slide the sleeve down over the screw, and you can line it up really easily then with the wood and start it straight.
But the screwdriver bit is already there. No?
It comes, yeah. Some of them come, and maybe it's a separate piece, but some of them come with a Phillips head screwdriver and
yeah.
or a, one of these square head screws
yeah.
drivers. And it, yeah. And so you put it in your drill bit, you shank it in your drill
yeah.
bit, and then you put the sleeve down over that, and it's magnet, so it holds it, and it...
As the screw goes yeah. in, the sleeve slides back.
Yeah, the sleeve contracts.
Yep.
And so it's for $7, so you can find them. And then the sheetrock screw one... sells for like $2.99, and that's an Ace Hardware, Home Depot, anything. Just tell them you want a screw holder kind of magnet.
Yeah.
And
all right.
So,
that's
about it.
That's it for email. All right, let's just a little bit of music, and then we have a special fellow we want to say happy birthday to. Hang on just a minute. Be right back. Well, as we always talk about, we have certainly gained more from this than we've given. We've met a lot of nice people through doing a Blind Handyman and Blind Like Me. One of the nice fellows we met, is a fellow named Bob Bartlett, who happens to be, on Saturday the 19th of January, 65 good heavens.
No,
years
man.
Old. Bob, I had no idea.
Yeah.
I've got warts older than that. No.
Yeah.
Anyway, happy birthday to Bob. Don, do you have anything you want to say about our friend Bob?
Well, I'll just tell him this. I turned 65 September, and it's the 15th, so I've got a few days on him, but it's not all it's cracked up to be. I mean, I wouldn't jump up and down over it. No, I'm going to tell you, y'all probably talk a little more, you and Bob, than to each other in person or on the phone than I do, but I occasionally get a humorous email from him. Kind of always kind of peps up your day, and he's a very jovial fella, and he's kind of, you know, helped us get some recognition from the people, the city people in Houston. The year that we got the award for the and then the mayor even Blind Handyman Day, and that was all a part of because of Bob's efforts. And so he's a nice guy, and I'm glad I know him.
You
know?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Mr. Don Shaw.
Yeah.
Say happy birthday to Bob Bartlett.
Mr. Bob, another year down the old tube, I believe. Sounds like a deal. And yeah, man, keep on with those projects you have going on with some of your boat projects and some of the different volunteer things that you're doing. Sounds like you got a plan for the next few years.
Keep sending us guests.
Keep sending us guests along the way. And
are we ready now? Huh? Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Bob Bartlett. Happy birthday to you.
Looking forward to seeing you in Houston.
Let's go. Yes, happy birthday, Bob. Special birthdays for special people. If you want one done, well, let us know. All right.
Yeah, the newest feature.
We're nice guys. Just we have nothing else. We have nothing else to do or talk about here. We'll just do your birthday if you want us to. We're stumbling along, doing show 220 in the Blind Handyman. Don Shaw and Don Patterson are here, and I'm Phil Parr, along with Roger. Roger, how you do your last name? What is your last name?
My name is Hink. H-I-N-C-K.
H-I-N-C-K. Roger Hink from where?
Well, I am in the shadow of Mount St. Helens in western Washington in a little village called Adna.
Adna, Washington.
Adna, Washington. And I don't know if you caught anything on the news, but we had a terrific flood here last month.
Well, I knew they had floods in Washington. I don't remember your particular town mentioned, but did you get lots of flood? Was it affecting you?
We're fortunate in that we're on a hillside, so the effect to us was to look down the hillside and watch this little village of Adna get totally inundated.
Man.
Watch all your neighbors get flooded, huh?
Yeah, exactly. That's... And some people might recognize the name Chehalis. We're about halfway between Portland and Seattle on I-5.
I saw something on the news today. Is there not some skiers or somebody missing today they were looking, or another search going on up there?
I think so. Yeah. And I'm not sure, but I think that might be on Mount Hood.
Yeah, on Mount Hood.
Mount Hood.
I'll be darned. How far are you from Mount Hood?
Oh, we're probably 100 miles from Mount Hood. We're closer to Mount St. Helens. We're only about 40 miles from Mount St. Helens.
So when that blew years ago, did y'all get any of the...
Absolutely. When it blew the first time, which was May 18th of 1980, it blew and it went east.
Okay.
And so exactly when, and that was when it got all the major headlines. And then a week later, on May 25th, it said, okay, I'll blow and go west. And that's when we got inundated. We have 4 acres of land where we're living right now, and it's a clay soil. And before the mountain dumped on us, we were bringing in all kinds of stuff to try and break up the clay to have a garden. And I'm telling you, after we got 4 inches of ash, we've had a good garden ever since.
What a deal.
Wow. So the mountain said, I don't want to be partial to you people east. I'll give the western face a little shower also, right?
That's right. It was really something to be inundated, you know, to the point that you couldn't go out of the house because of all the ash.
And it was that bad?
It literally was that bad. We were in the house for several days, and like one of the neighbors in the neighborhood, he put on a dust mask and went to town to get groceries. And after we were housebound for 3 or 4 days, we decided we would do the big breakout and head north. And when we got as far as Olympia, then the ash petered out, and then it was like, oh man, it's no longer a moonscape.
I'll be done.
Wow, that's
so that
amazing.
Actually, you think you improved your soil?
Absolutely, because the ash was so. It was like the worst sand you've ever seen in your life. I went out. We had a driveway cement slab, uh-huh. And me being the wise guy, I thought, okay, well, we'll just blow this off with the garden hose. No, you don't push that stuff around with a garden hose. It was like all powdered cement.
So you had to shovel it off your driveway?
Oh, yeah. And to me, one of the most remarkable things was that the gutters on the house, they filled with the ash, and you would think, because it's terrifically heavy, and you would think, well, that's going to rip the gutters right off the house. So, So the people that built those gutters and put them on the house, I'm telling you, kudos to them, because it was full of ash, but they stayed up there.
After 20 years, 30 years, y'all still have this ash there, right?
The ash is in the soil.
In the soil.
It's tilled in, and it's rained in enough that it becomes kind of a geological thing now, that when you dig down a certain amount, you can go, oh, okay, there's 1980.
How long, you know, say like your car and your gutters and your roof, I mean, just in quick time, how long did it take y'all to get back to almost normal?
It was months.
Months.
I bet it was.
Yeah, it was because when you know, like I said, you couldn't hose it off, so it took... You know, and of course we get a lot of terrific rain around here, so it took all that amount of time to erode it in, and then for the grass to grow back.
Yeah.
And it did cause, you know, like people were concerned about the animals around Mount St. Helens and all that kind of stuff, and whether the forests would come back, and they came back remarkably well, because I'm not a geologist, but. I'm assuming because of the texture of it and the amount of heat that it retained, that stuff was able to grow really well. So it's remarkable, and of course a lot of time's gone by too, but a lot of great growth went on.
But if you had had a swimming pool,
oh man,
yeah.
It would really have screwed up your.
Yeah.
My heavens!
But, here's another interesting thing. I had a friend that grew a lot of agriculture around this area. So he was doing hay, and of course, I mean, May, we're talking, you know, spring, summer.
Yeah.
And the blades, when he's cutting the hay, he showed us how chewed up the blades were, because when you're cutting through the hay and all this ash is mixed in with the grass hay, it's just like you're going down the beach and grinding. And it was incredible how quickly the blades would erode from that. And, of course, there'd be a big cloud of ash as they're going along cutting the hay.
Well, yeah, there would be. But next year, he'd be back pretty well to...
Yeah, because by then you had enough terrific rain to pound the ash down into the ground.
And you do get a lot of rain. I know they do in Seattle, and you do also where you are.
Yeah, Western Washington, we get a lot. And right now, because of, I think they're calling it La Nina, we're just really getting a terrific amount of rain. It's just a huge amount. And like I said, that's what prompted the flood that was December the 3rd was when the flood came down. And there was like 14 inches of rain in one day.
Good Lord.
Oh, man. Yeah, good Lord is right. We're on a hillside with a daylight basement, and we determined that the limit for us is 7 inches of rain. When it hit 7 inches, the garage in our basement, it just sprung like a bunch of artesian wells, like little tiny squirts of water coming up all over the floor.
Oh, wow. But listen, I don't want to get away from the gutters. How did you get this out of your gutters?
Well, we had to climb up the ladder and take a little bucket, and that's where I was kind of unhappy with my wife, because I was, as I am wont to do, I happened to be on the telephone, and she got impatient, so she decided she's going to go up the ladder with this pail. And she scooped the pail full of ash and then proceeded to mess up her back because like I was saying, it is so terrifically heavy that, you know, you think, oh, well, just, you know, put in a little pail and I'll go up and take it out. Well, no, it's going to take some muscle to do that. So basically we had to do it by hand to go up and take a little trowel and trowel it all out.
And it's a good thing you thought. I never would have thought of that. That wouldn't have, probably wouldn't have crossed my mind that the gutters would be full of ashes. So next rain we had would have made a mess. I guess shop vac wouldn't have done it, would it? Wouldn't have had enough.
Well, I suppose no. Now that you mention it, probably would if you had a good extension. Of course, I don't even know if we owned a shop vac.
Yeah, 30 years ago. Would.
Yeah, 20 years ago, whatever.
Yeah.
All right,
it was also interesting, the reactions of the different insurance companies. We had a neighbor down the hill, and the insurance came out and said, here's your check, and they hired somebody to clean it all off. And our insurance company said, oh, no, that's an act of God. We're not going to cover you. You're on your
own. Yeah. Oh, I think insurance companies do kind of what they – I had a lightning strike, and they were about $12,000 worth of damage. And they paid up like clockwork. I could not believe it. I got new control. I just bought a new mixing board and got hit by lightning, and I've got another new one.
Oh, wow.
So, but that's not really, we got off on some other subjects, which are interesting, but that's really, you raise miniature horses, am I correct?
Right, and that relates to what we were previously using to break up the soil was the miniature horse stuff, which, of course, that works really good with the shavings. And
uh-huh.
Yes, we do, and we have 13 miniature horses currently, and we have bought more land some distance away. It's even closer to Mount St. Helens.
Yeah.
But we bought 5 acres of land, and we built a barn, and so we're kind of between locations now. We have the house in one place and the new barn and the land, and, of course, the miniature horses, they just love it because instead of being on a hillside, they're now on flat ground with a lot of grass.
Having
a good time. But just so everyone will understand, a miniature horse, their breed name is American Miniature Horse.
Uh-huh.
And they're the only breed that what takes to be in the breed is only their measurement. So when you're at the last hair of the mane on their back and you measure to the ground, and you are 34 inches or less, then you're considered to be eligible to be a miniature horse in terms of registering the horse. And I guess another comparison would be, if you can think of your kitchen counter, that's how tall the tallest miniature horse would be.
Yeah, because table height is about 34 inches, isn't it?
That's correct.
But the mane being you're measuring on the head, right, of the horse, not the back?
You're measuring what they call the last hair of the mane, which means when you come all the way down the horse's neck to where the mane ends on their back.
Yeah.
And then you get a level, and you have they have to have their feet all standing straight.
Uh-huh.
And then you measure to the ground, and you say, oh, okay, you're 34 inches or under. Now, as we all know, there's horses that are 36 and 37 and on up. But there's one registry called the American Miniature Horse Association,
right,
and they go 34 and under. There's another one called the American Miniature Horse Registry, and I think they go up to like 38 is where they stop.
So all of yours are under 34?
We're under 34. We're even down to like 28. And when they're born, that's the fun part, because when they're born, the idea, you know, littler is better. They range in price based on, you know, how do they look and how small are they and that kind of thing. Are their legs straight? Are their teeth straight and all mm-hmm. that kind of stuff? But the ones that we've had born, and we've probably had about 20, 25 horses born here on the place, they've run 17, 18, 19, 20 inches when they're born.
Uh-huh.
We have one horse that his name is Blackjack, and people say, well, why do you call him Blackjack? He's white. And we say, well, when he was born, he was 21 inches.
Okay.
Which is Blackjack.
That is, yep,
the other thing about that is 21 inches being born is a little on the questionable side. You go, are you going to go over 34? Because if they go over 34, they're not worth as much money.
So,
really,
I guess cutting to the chase here, what kind of dollars are we talking, and maybe who would be a most likely customer, if that's not personal.
They literally range all over the place. You can have a pet that is not a show horse for $500.
Okay.
Or you can have a show horse, and then you get into whether you're talking boys and girls, that would, a show horse would probably start out at $1,500 or $2,000, and then it goes to the moon. You can go up into $10,000,
$20,000, $30,000. Wow. Because I was going to say it costs $500 to raise one, wouldn't it?
Well, now, see, now that's a very fair thing for you to say, because it takes 11 months to make one. And the sad part is that you might not end up making one. You know, we've had them also, unfortunately, where they are born and there's difficulty in the birth and they may not make it. So then mm-hmm. you go, gee, I don't get to make another one of these for another 11 months or another year.
Yeah.
Whereas someone raising puppies, they go, oh, well, here's 10. No, no. I'll have another 10.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
One
right.
other thing, too, it's like, you know, you think of horses and you think of, I mean, we live here in Texas, so it's a common sight, and you go to the ranch land and you see barbed wire fence. Well, your guys are, what, you have to have special fencing because they're pretty susceptible to predators. I mean, to, you know, a big dog could do them damage, right?
Big dog or even a little dog. We've had difficulty sometimes with neighbors that have the little dog, and they'll say, oh, my little dog, they couldn't hurt your horse. Well, one little nip on a mini's heel and you've got a ruined horse, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And the fence that we use is steel fence. So it's 48 inches tall, and it's a woven wire fence, and you don't want anything to do with barbed wire.
Okay.
Horses, because they don't have enough sense.
Yeah, but this is more even a finer mesh than what people use for hog wire, or would that be about the same?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It's finer mesh. And the very first horse that we had, and when we didn't know anything from straight up, we said to the farm supply place, well, gee, you know, what should we use? And they, oh, hog panels. Well, we had a Chevy van at that point, so here we are hauling these hog panels on top of the Chevy van, and we built this goofy pen, and I think back on those days, and I go, you know, just like anything else, and whatever you get into, you start out as a tenderfoot, and you go, oh,
yeah, right, as a neophyte.
Oh, that was pretty dumb thing to do.
Interesting. So I know a lot of people would show your horse, or they just want them for family pets. Oddly enough, my wife's our daughter rides jumping horses, and she has quite an elaborate horse. And then so they, you know, they're kind of high-strung animals. Some of them, especially the more pedigree, it seems like they have the. And they bought a miniature as a companion horse for the big horse, and the little, and they call him Pony Friend, and he stays with the big horse.
Yeah.
And just keeps him company.
And that also works for the miniature horse, because when we were first buying horses, this is Blackjack, the one I was telling you about. His stall buddy, believe it or not, was a rabbit. Well, how loony is this? Well, then later on when we had babies and we sold one of our babies to a fellow, he had a rooster that was was his stall buddy. And they want their companionship, you know, and that's really something. So, but the other thing they do is they will pull a cart and they pull a wagon. My wife drives in competition, and believe you me, this is competition. It's called combined driving event. And she has a wagon, and she even has what they call a navigator that goes with her. And they'll go over hill and dale, and they have to complete a certain distance in a certain amount of time. They have to go through obstacles, you know, just a precise way. And they're judged totally on the skill of doing that. So it doesn't matter whether you're blonde and beautiful. It matters whether you drive correctly.
Right.
Right.
And so how many horses? Will one horse pull that wagon, or are these regular standard horses?
Yeah, what she does is she drives a hitch, which is two horses.
Right.
Two of the minis. And then also they drive singly. And see, that's the other thing that a lot of people that aren't aware about miniature horses, they think, well, that little tiny thing, you know. Well, that little tiny thing, the history of those guys is back in the coal mines, where they would be mining out a very small vein of coal, and they were using the little ponies and what we call miniatures to pull out little wagon loads of coal. And they're, really? So they're very strong.
Yeah, what a deal.
Man, that's...
Well, you alluded to the fact that when we bought our first miniatures, why would a guy just... You didn't wake up Saturday morning and go, Sylvia, let's go buy a miniature horse. What do you think?
Well, he did say that, and it turned out her name was Rita.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, I have a funny story on that one, too.
Right.
I even coined a term for it, because after we got into it, you're going, what did... How? Why do I have all these horses? What is? Where did this start?
What did I do?
And people would ask you, well, how did you first start? And I said, I have no idea. I said, I think there was a virus going around, and I said, I call it the Equinus Aquarius virus.
Equinus Aquarius virus.
That's right.
I like it.
We got one for a pet, and that is your absolute death. You say, oh, well, I'll just have one for a pet.
Yeah.
Well, that is so cute. Well, maybe we could get another one.
And that one will be lonely. We wouldn't want a lonely horse.
Yeah, you can. They got to have a buddy. And so then you go, oh, those babies. Oh, maybe we could get a mare and we could have a baby. And then you find out about the driving and you go, oh, wow, we could get a cart and have, well, this one is a pet with a few hog panels on a Chevy van. Has now expanded into, we have a feed room, a stable, a 40 by 96 foot barn, a tractor, a horse trailer, a car trailer to haul the tractor on. I mean, it's just, just run amok around here.
So let me ask you this. I figure you know a guy that would get trapped into the miniature horse. How about these, what are these, the farms, the animals that you're raising for the wool?
Okay, same idea.
Yeah, I mean, the alpacas, and they talk about how gentle they are. And for more information, visit an alpaca farm near you. You know?
That's right. And I would warn anyone that's going to, you know, if you're going to decide to get into more than one or whatever, that just be careful.
Yeah.
Well, I know somebody's asked you that, especially when you start talking to them about talking to them like, that they're pets. But it would be impossible to housebreak a miniature, right?
Well, there's a fellow by the name of Dan Shaw, and he currently lives in North Carolina.
Oh, yeah?
And I got a call years ago, and again, we're in Western Washington, and I got a call from a friend of mine. And he says, this lady called me from up on the peninsula, which is up, you know, on the northern part of Western Washington. And she was wondering about using a miniature horse as a guide horse.
I've heard of
it. Okay. Yeah. I've read some stuff about this.
That's right. And I went absolutely ballistic. I said, that is the craziest, the dumbest, the most insane idea I have ever heard in my life. I said, any horse I got would lead you right off a cliff and just have a nice day.
You've already alluded to the fact that they weren't real bright.
And what I'm about to tell you is true. I know more than hung up the phone, and I'm just human. I thought, that's just silly. And I turned on the television, and Barbara Walters was interviewing Dan Shaw and his miniature guide horse. And I just, oh, man. And so then later on, he was on some other he's on Oprah.
Yeah.
He was on Oprah. And then I read an article, and I thought, I have got to get in contact with this guy. Well, at that time, he was living in Maine, and my wife and I had never been to New England, and I said, I'm going to just send him an email. Well, come to find out, he was born in Oregon, and he emailed me back, and he's born in Oregon, so we had that in common, that we were both born in Oregon.
Yeah.
And he says, anytime you want to come out. And so we went out to Maine. And Simon had the absolute greatest time, and his guide horse's name is Cuddles. And it just showed you, you know, never say never, and don't think that somebody has a crazy idea, because he did absolutely fine with him. I mean, completely on the airplane, all kinds of stuff.
And Cuddles was house broke, is what you're saying.
And Cuddles is
I think house trained
house
would be.
House trained, yeah.
Cuddles was house trained, and Cuddles was actually smart enough to guide Dan around the construction site and wherever just like a a dog guide would be.
Absolutely. And it's just amazing.
If you stop and think about it, like I know people have, back when they rode horses, a horse always knows his way home.
Would get a ride home on their horse.
If you were in town and your old mule got off, you'd probably get home and find him in the barn, It's sort of homing horses as they were. So
yeah.
maybe he could learn.
My experience with, because we don't have our horses in the house, but the funniest experience I ever had was with horses, and speaking of the house, was I was talking on the phone, this gal, about horses of all things, and we have a sunken living room, which means you have to step down about 8 inches, and then there's the foyer to the front door, and on either side of the front door is a side glass, okay? Well, our horses were out in the yard just having a nice time. Well, they decided that they would come up on the porch, okay, fine, and they look through the side glass, and they go, oh, well, what's going on in there? Well, I'm tied down to the phone. Well, the other thing they like to do is that they would rub on the doorknob. Well, this time they popped the door open. And, again, this is a sunken living room, and there's a big fireplace right in the middle. So the living room is like 20 feet across, fireplace in the middle. The one horse comes in, steps down to the right of the fireplace. The other one comes in, steps down to the left of the fireplace. The other thing you need to know is we have huge windows. And I'm just beside myself because you can't spook these horses and have them go running through the glass. And I'm on the phone talking to this lady, and I said, I got to go. I got two horses in the living room.
Man.
And she said, now, what did you say? So you're able to get them out without breaking glass or getting them
Yeah. You just move real slow and say, okay, it's time for you to go back outside. But they just wanted to see what the humans were doing. I mean, hey, what's this?
Yeah.
You know.
So they are gentle, very gentle animals.
They are extremely gentle. They also, everyone has his or her own personality. But overall, as a rule, they are very gentle. The other thing that's so great about them is if they should happen to step on your foot, it's not like a Clydesdale crunching your toes, you know.
Right.
And I can't emphasize it enough. They are very gentle, very kind. Some people get confused and they say, oh, Shetland, and I had a Shetland when I was a kid and he bit me and all that kind of stuff. And, and don't they come from Shetlands? And of course, the truth is that, of course, some of them go back to Shetlands. And it's a matter of breeding down for the size. But my experience has been that they're just absolutely wonderful, and they don't have any nasty habits of biting you or stuff like that.
Well, let me just ask you this. Is this, for you and your lady, a money-making thing? Do you make money doing this, or is it just a hobby?
We had to, when we got, you know, when you get past X number of horses, you have to decide, okay, what are we going to do? So for us, it is a money-making proposition in that we have bred the horses and we've sold horses and, you know, entertained people with rides and things like that.
And yeah. think of the write-offs.
The expenses of your equipment and your feed and stuff like that. Because the other thing you have to think about is, oh, gee, that cute little horse, I'll bet he doesn't eat much. Well, that's true. He doesn't eat much, but when you get 13 of them, they'll eat a little bit.
It adds up.
The farrier comes around and says, you know, I'll have my money, thank you very much.
Yeah. And so you have some at your house, and then you have some. So what part do you play? Do you feed them? Are you the primary care person or what?
Currently, all the horses are at the new place because it's like they have their own little barn and their own little palace out there. My wife primarily takes care of them, and I help as needed.
You tote the feed sacks and fill up the feed trough.
Or help load the hay, you know, that kind of stuff.
But you're not afraid to get in the pen with them.
No, not
at all. That doesn't bother you a bit. And I guess you could brush, groom, help that
brush,
to help.
I'll give you another funny story. Of course, in the process of learning about how to do all this stuff with the horses, one of the things you learn is, okay, we're going to do this thing called driving, and we're going to have a little cart, and we're going to drive. Okay, so my wife hired a trainer who I found out was a little bit dyslexic. And so her big thing was, oh, well, let's have Roger drive. Okay, fine. I'm not afraid of anything. So I get in the cart, I got the horse, and all you got to tell me is when to turn so I don't, you know, drive over a cliff or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, her being a little dyslexic, she says, right. And you and I understand right means turn. Oh, let's all say it together. Turn right.
Mm-hmm.
And what she meant was left.
Okay.
That could be a problem.
The moral of the story is don't let any dyslexic trainer tell you which way to turn.
My wife is not dyslexic, but she does. I would be carrying something. She'll say, right. I mean, your other right.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, yeah. I don't think she's dyslexic. But,
no, I think she's talking about you.
She's talking about where she could be. you and your wife take care of these horses, and you make money doing this. And yeah. The only thing that I would think about is if one of them is pregnant, you're not going to be at the other. You have to stay over there all night till they have the...
Well, that's a very good question, too, because, like I was saying, we've had at least a couple dozen horses born. And the way you do that is when it's near time for the birth, you have your birthing stall, and then we have a video camera to watch the horse all through the night. Well, that's where my wife comes in as far as not sleeping very much. And I'm telling you, when they decide to have that baby, it's kapow. And so you've got to move fast. Well, we were truly blessed for years and years and years. The moms would have the babies just as easy as you please, and we kept having boy after boy after boy. And when you were asking about the prices of them, girls are more expensive because you can get more babies by having a girl. I think we had 17 boys.
Really?
Well, finally, I think it was Comet Cohotec was going by, and it was in the spring, and this mare decides she's going to have our very first filly. Well, I kid my wife. I say, well, what you did was you earned the Royal Order of the Equine Order of the Purple Wrist. And what I mean by that is this was the first time we had complications with the baby being born breech.
Oh.
And so my wife went in to straighten out the legs, and we got a filly.
Yeah.
Our first filly. And because it's Comet Cohotec, we named it Comet.
Well, of course you would. Yes, you would.
And the next year, 1 year later, the same mare decided she's going to have another filly, but it was going to be born breech. My wife went in, pulled the little filly out, and at that time the Hale Bopp comment was going on.
So that's Hale.
So her name is named Katie Bopp. And the same thing, the breech birth, and we're just going, okay, I guess the way you get fillies is to have a comet go over.
I gather that you were totally blind, Roger?
Yes.
And your wife is totally sighted since she drives car. Is this your jobs? I mean, neither one of you have work anywhere else?
I taught high school special education for 29 years.
Is that right?
And we started with the miniature horses in 1989. So we were doing the teaching and the horses for about the last 10 years before we retired. My wife was a middle school computer teacher. And so now we're both retired, so we can devote full time.
Now, when you taught physical education at school, were you blind? Did you have a sight then, or?
No, special education.
Special ed.
Special ed.
Yeah. I had partial sight for a lot of years. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and then probably the last 15 years, then I had lost my sight
completely.
Completely, right. But by doing special education, I had a teacher's aide, and I was very, very blessed. I had the people that worked for me were really, really good, and it worked out really, really very well.
Well, you may have been very well blessed, I'm sure you were, but you're also very sharp. Make no mistake about that.
Well, thank you.
I want to do a program with you on my Blind Like Me show, so we'll give you a couple weeks to settle down and get over this exciting interview.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, we got to quit waiting so long, too. It's been great. I mean,
we'll call you back. You're really... You really have been a very good guest, very well informed, very well spoken. You should do you should do public speaking if you don't.
Well, thank you very much. And if anyone, would you like me to give an email address if someone has any questions?
Yeah.
Yes, sir. I would.
Okay. It's my email address is mini horse teacher at localaccess.com, and that's localaccess.com.
Mini horse teacher at localaccess.com. Doesn't get any better than that, does it?
I'd be glad to hear from you. And also, if you're curious about Dan Shaw and his guide horse, the website there is danandcuddles.com.
All right. We would like to probably get in touch with him. He would be a good guest for us, and maybe on both shows at different times. And we'll tell him you sent us.
Oh, absolutely. He's a fine gentleman.
All right.
Well, Roger, so are you, and thank you a whole lot for doing this show with us, and I'll be in touch in a week or two.
I enjoyed it very much, and you guys have a great day.
We will, Roger. Thank
you. Have a good one, Roger.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
What a guy.
Yeah, what a deal, man.
Yeah.
Can't beat those school teachers.
Miniature hum. I mean, a miniature horse. Miniature hum.
Miniature horse teacher.
Miniature hum.
Some kind of access.
Yeah. Miniature horse teacher. Miniature horse teacher at, what was it?
Direct access or some kind of access?
What was it, Joe?
I think it was direct access.
I think it was. Directaccess.com. It's on the tape.
It's on the show.
It's on the show, so anybody that wants it.
Yeah.
Anyway, what a guy. Roger, I don't remember his last name, but anyway, what a guy.
Sounds like it might be about time for them to move out to the new land, doesn't it, with the horses.
H-I-N-C-K, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe we can get him to Houston in our gathering in 08.
Yeah, that'd be neat, wouldn't it?
He would be a good speaker, good to come down and visit with us.
Yeah.
I enjoy meeting a fellow like that. Of all the people, Donald, Pat, and Don Shaw, that we never would have met if we had not started doing this stupid blind handicap.
That's for sure.
You know?
I'll second that one.
Just like I said about the list mail today,
yeah.
It never ceases to amaze me at what guys are willing to attempt or what they talk about, but it also never has ceased to amaze me at how intelligent that some of the people that we encounter.
I think about, why in the hell am I doing this? Why don't I don't have to do this? And then I meet somebody like that just brightens my day up. All right, guys, we're gone. Don, Pat, thank you. Don Shaw,
yep.
We'll see you next week. I see you said the blind man as you picked up his hammer and saw. Bye-bye.